A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cabin Cooking with the Parents.
With good old Lloyd.
And here is another old favorite recipe of mine that was served on many family reunions and dinners. We call it Wild Rice Luncheon Supreme. The ingredients are as follows. You get one small can of mushrooms, 2 tablespoons of oleo, 2 tablespoons of flour, 1 cup of cream, 2 tablespoons of chopped green pepper, 2 tablespoons of chopped pimento, 1 cup of Spam diced, 2 hard-cooked eggs chopped, and 1 egg yolk beaten. First, you should brown the mushrooms in oleo. Add the flour, and then place the flour and mushroom mixture into a double boiler. Blend the cream gradually. Add green pepper and pimento. Add the cubed Spam. Stir in the raw egg yolk and chopped hard-boiled eggs. Heat slowly but thoroughly. Serve over a bed of Minnesota wild rice. You might also consider augmenting the cream sauce with a can of Cramwell's Cream of Wildlife Soup. Man, oh man, what a dish. You can proudly put this on any luncheon buffet and bask in the glory of the grins around the room. Wild Rice Luncheon Supreme allows the home cook to adapt, adopt, and improve. Doesn't get much better than that.
From the glow of St. Paul's number one, welcome to another edition of Cabin Country. Give us the time and we'll take you out of the traffic and away from the levee. Let's find the place where the loons call out among the moonlit waves, where the wind sighs among the Norway pines. Pull up a dock chair, have a sip of your coffee, and get a line in the water. This is Cabin Country. Now here's Bjorn Lloydsted, and I'm Fudd Klugman with another woodland escape.
Well, we're just as glad as ever to have you join us again here on Cabin Country.
That's right.
And Fudd, frankly, we're kind of going a little nostalgic here for the good old days of a bit that we used and enjoyed and have plenty to work with yet. We got about a baker's dozen deep into something we often called the Schmidt Scenic Moment.
Schmidt Scenic Moment.
Yeah, and reviewing the artwork on the 24-pack cans of the Schmidt Scenics and the nostalgia they'd bring back.
That's right.
To both beer can collectors and appreciators of the Cabin Country experience. And, we got, as I said, about a baker's dozen deep into the Scenics and realized, gadzooks,
there's more.
We've got about a 9-pack left here, so...
Yeah.
Clearly not a true baker's dozen, but we still have some Scenics that we need to...
To get through.
We do.
I think some of our longtime listeners will be like,
breath of fresh air, it's back.
Whatever happened to those guys?
Scenic moment, my goodness. Well, here they are.
They're
in
sitting
all
in front
their
of us.
Glory, right in front of us, Fudd. And I think if you do us the honor of...
Trying to do a blind...
blind grab.
I'd say that. Digging deep, but we've kind of got the box top
we
here.
Are, we are. Yes, there's a cool 9 waiting to be reviewed, so...
And we kind of went through and tried to remember what we did pick out previously, but...
We're fairly certain you're either going to get something new.
If not, you know, I guess we'll just rehash. You know, everything old is new again.
Well, there you go.
So... Well, all right, let's dig deep here.
There he goes. And, reaching deep into the 9-pack.
Eyes closed, and I feel one that
coming
I'm going to grab.
Coming up with treasure, right?
And
there. What do we have, Fudd?
We've got an old-time farmer.
Ah, yes.
Gripping a...
Moldboard plow behind... What are we at? One or two? A pair? Is it a...
Two, I think.
A team. A team of two. They look to be Belgians or Clydesdales.
Yeah, they got kind of light-colored manes.
Good-sized workhorses.
Horses. They're the feature of the can under the Schmidt sign here.
I'm going to guess a whiffle tree behind both horses' derrieres. And, man hard at work walking behind the team.
Thank you, sir.
Handing me
looks
this.
Looks like a cap, like it's... He's wearing a fedora or something that looks like a throwback to the
good Lord, it almost 30s looks like, or something. There's like a... One of the Untouchables is out plowing the back 40.
Is that Kevin Costner?
Elliot Ness. And those other guys.
Yeah.
Sky is blue. The grain is ripe. And that's a little confusing. You'd be out plowing when the... I don't know. I see now. Okay, I take that back. He's in an adjacent field, Fudd.
Oh, I
and
see.
And grain is apparently ripe in the one field, and he's plowing up, maybe going to get ready to spray some seed for winter wheat or something along those lines. I'm not sure.
Winter wheat.
It's a cover crop. You know, it can be used for fodder, if you will, in the springtime. But it's, something to keep the soil in its place, prevent that dreaded dust bowl from coming back.
Radio.
And I'm thinking right. if it's a hard-working untouchable out there behind the moldboard plow with a team of Belgians or Clydesdales or what have you, this is going back a ways. Were there farmers, Fudd, in the family, in the Klugman lineage? Were there good old-fashioned...
No, I don't think
yeoman
so.
Farmers.
I mean, my great-grandfather came from Austria... Just around the turn of the century, I think.
And sure.
He came from a family of wine growers in Austria. And in fact, he and his brothers brought over a wine barrel, like one old wine barrel.
Wow.
And the three of them like fought over who got to keep this one wine barrel.
Right.
This is on my dad's side now. And I know my grandpa was a milkman at one point.
Okay. He drove the milk wagon or was it a milk truck?
I think it was a milk truck.
Okay.
And my... Mom's side, this is the side with Gramps, who we've mentioned quite a few times.
Gramps
was a salesman, I think, for a trucking
you
outfit.
Made us happy up there.
I think his father was an undertaker.
Yeah. Vintners, undertakers. And
nothing close to farming. Now, your family, on the other hand.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
Lots of farming.
Oh, David. Yeah, that was... On both sides. Both sides, yeah. It was a legion of Scandinavian dirt farmers coming over to become upper Midwestern dirt farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And I shouldn't say dirt farmers. What'd you grow?
Dirt.
Lots of it. Some of the finest soils. No, it was kind of the tradition of you do everything because you want for nothing and finding a shop. Mm-hmm. Is going to involve a lot of travel. So my father's great-grandfather, or possibly great-great-grandfather, I'm not even sure, but came over before my mom's grandfather. It was actually my grandpa who came over from Norway, from the old country.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. And, in that situation, he was one of many kids, and times were tough. You hear about the various... kind of food shortages and depressions in European history, and it was his opportunity to come over to make times easier on the family because he was 16, 17, and there were a lot of kids and not a lot of food to feed those kids with, so he decided, I'm going to America to try my hands at farming over there, or whatever might lead him to, but that's what he knew. I'm told of the other side of the family... The Dakotas was where they landed.
Okay.
And some pretty intense tales that you might remember from history classes of blizzards and...
Right.
You know, sod houses and all kinds of... We lost some stock in the storm of, you know, '02 or whatever. These kinds of things. And then my father's side, it would not be surprising to see him wearing one of these hats and gripping the handles of a moldboard plow and walking behind the team to try to get some crops planted. And I know my dad talking about they had farm horses prior to finding enough coin to buy one of those newfangled tractors.
You know?
Yeah, they had workhorses. And And my grandpa on mom's side also had workhorses. And there were tales of my uncle getting kicked in the chest by one of the Clydes.
Yes, yeah, just right.
Wham! A big hoof hitting him right square in the chest. And, well, do we now have four kids or do we still have five? How's he doing? You know, that kind of
yeah,
stuff.
So, yeah.
And I think, now this is going old school on this Schmidt Scenic, because the guy is walking behind the plow.
Right.
I know with Grandpa's version of this and Great-Grandpa's version of this, they were seated, you know, on those metal kind of, it's like a metal seat that almost looks like a metal wiffle ball chair.
Yeah.
Full of holes.
Right, you know, right.
And then attached to several plows, but it needed oxen or horse to pull it. So, mm-hmm. So they had that kind of thing. And then my dad would make jokes about the wiffle tree, which I thought, wiffle tree. And I may not be saying that right. If any of you listeners out there have a farming past and you remember hearing about this kind of thing, but it was something that they hung behind the hind ends of these big workhorses to catch the offerings they would dispense with as they pulled the big plow. It was not uncommon. And if you were going into town, too, with the wagon or the buggy,
yeah,
you had to do the same, because the last thing you wanted in the streets of Glenwood or Kensington was, you know, all kinds of manure all over the...
Right.
These are
right.
big horses, so their their output is also impressive. <Large. laughs> See, that's quite a load you've deposited, Highway 25. But, yeah, so the wiffle tree, you know, and that became a joke, but with the family, of, like, how well did they use the wiffle tree and how much shoveling needs to be done when you get back. Or
wow.
Which always struck me as strange. I was thinking, God, if you're out there in the field, why not just let it fall? You know, I mean, it's not fertilizer.
Yeah.
I mean, for Pete's sake, why do you... No, we'll collect a bunch of it and then run around again with manure spreaders behind the team, catching more manure. I don't get it, but, you know, there you go. Growing up a suburban kid who knows very little other than...
I'm sure somebody will really want to straighten us out.
I would assume, and I would hope so.
Give us the history on the manure.
Yeah.
Why collect it, or did you just not want to run through it?
Line from a movie I used to see in school, the gods are crazy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
PhD who studies levels of chemicals and elephant dung and trying to impress a woman in the film. She asks me what I do. I tell her I collect manure. Probably thinks I shovel the stuff. Not that I'm writing my PhD. Anyway, feel free and hit us again if you would, Fudd, with the web address if they'd like to send in a...
CabinCountryPod@gmail.com.
You can straighten us out on all things manure.
Wiffle tree.
The wiffle tree. That, you know, maybe that was just something Great-Grandpa came up with, but
there are probably lots of names for
it. There's got to be. Yeah. I can think of some off the cuff here that I will not say out loud for fear of us getting asked to stop. But, interesting idea, and what's behind it? The whole concept of shoveling out, or as they say in Britain, mucking out the stalls, you know, getting rid of what the cattle or hogs have produced. I know that, that was a necessary task.
Oh, yes.
And at the same time, you would, you know, load that up onto the honey wagon and then take it out to the fields with the manure spreader. And as my dad used to say, the Nuri spreader. I was like, Nuri. Oh, manure. I get it. You're being cute now.
Nuri.
I don't know Grandpa's dad, Grandpa, if we can, or, you know, that side of things. I don't know that they raised a lot of hogs other than just straight up for food.
Oh, okay.
And I can tell you, and you can probably say the same if you've driven past farms that focus on hog raising.
Mm-hmm.
Hog manure is its own special something. It's
yeah, wow.
Bust out Gramps' World War I gas mask and put that on when we, get the team hitched up, because we're spreading hog manure today, folks.
My God.
And wow. Ideally, it stays in the field and not all over your overhauls. But wow, nice hot sunny day, maybe some humidity and several hundred pound. Hog manure. That's a recipe for
Well, maybe it was
stomach ailments. I'm not sure.
As simple as just collecting the horse manure in the wiffle trees or whatever.
Right, and
collecting it and piling it up so you can distribute it more regularly rather than just whenever the horse goes.
Yeah. Know? Well, and there was something to be said too, I'm told, and this comes from my father-in-law. Interestingly enough, he grew up the son of a postmaster.
Oh, okay.
In the town we call Piers.
Oh.
Yeah. And okay. I know for a fact we've got a couple of listeners who are going to, ears are going to perk up at that one because there's some connections.
Yes.
But they would talk about, like, they'd go to a neighbor farm and bring along a bucket and... And it only gets weirder from here, folks. What are they going to do with all that? And he always said, you take a shovel in your bucket and you'd lift kind of almost like strata of this well-rotted cow manure and find all kinds of grubworms and night crawlers. And you know, you kind of got past. I guess if you grow up in this vicinity in this time period, it was not a big deal to reach in, probably barehand these things. Maybe he wore gloves, I don't know, but that became fish bait.
Uh-huh.
And then you took that over to the streams and rivers or lakes if you could get, you know, time in somebody's boat, and you went out and had, you know, it was a Donnybrook. You had outstanding results fishing with these worms from the cow or horse manure pile.
Wow.
So, yeah, kind of bringing us home again with cabin country and
rightio
pictures of father-in-law's a young man holding up the northern pike. He'd landed on manure worms.
Wowzers.
Which, those two words together might cause a few spines to shiver a little bit. Fishing with manure worms. You going to eat that fish?
Absolutely.
It was just used to catch the fish.
Yeah.
It wasn't brought up for years.
Unlike that Yule Gibbons story of...
Oh.
Of,
that's right. They, you know, you have to give us that story.
Cowhands or, you know, horse riding cowpoke in on a farm, I guess more of a ranch down in the American Southwest. I want to say New Mexico or Arizona.
Okay. Right.
There was a river they would routinely ride through, and then the carp would spawn.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've ever been around, like, the Mississippi, when the carp are running, it's something to behold. You can almost walk across the water on the backs of these huge carp that are just coming upstream to mate. And they thought, God, there's got to be a way to use these things somehow. So they fished with pitchforks. They'd kind of corral off the river, riding the horses towards these carp. And then they'd kind of do like almost like a weir kind of thing you might use for catching minnows.
Yeah.
And they'd trap all these carp. And then they'd literally shovel them out of the river with pitchforks.
Okay.
Trying to figure out what to do with them. And then, because they tasted so foul. like, what do we do with this? And, well, God bless Yule. He figured out a way, if you keep reading, you know, to make carp table worthy, as he'd say. But the joke amongst the cowhands was the one gentleman said, oh, we've done this for years. You cover the carp in fresh horse manure, and then you bake them off in the fire around the campsite. And then, you know, when it's cooked, almost like a salt crust for fish, which is all the rage with some of the chefs out there. This is manure crust, I guess, right? With carp.
Right.
So then you crack that off with a hammer once the fish is done. And he said, fish wasn't worth much, but the manure was awfully tasty. Well, always a ray of sunshine. Right?
This thank is optimist. You, Yule.
Yeah.
Thanks, Yule.
Glass is half full, not half empty.
Yeah.
Some of the most delicious baked manure we've ever had. Just a hint of soupçon of carp underlying that chewed grass. Yeah.
Might be the special at the Cracklin' Jack Pine. This,
I haven't seen it on the menu, but they've done some crazy, crazy stuff.
Well, why don't we try to get the taste of manure out of our mouths and take a short break. But when we come back, we'll have even more to say on the Schmidt Scenic Moment right after this.
Cabin Country would like to thank you for making the Cabin Country Podcast the number one podcast on GSPN, the Gas Station Podcast Network. If your favorite gas station doesn't play Cabin Country while you are at the pumps filling your tank, please tell them that you want to hear Cabin Country while you gas up. Nothing says gas like Cabin Country.
Cabin Country 1954. State by state, we'll shine a light on some history, resources, and outdoors excitement found in many of the states referred to as Cabin Country. Will we visit them all? Probably not. But rest back in your lounger or your boat seat and listen to the travelogues, state by state. Remember, too, that if you don't hear your favorite locality covered in Cabin Country 54, contact the show at
cabincountrypod@gmail.com.
And let Fudd, Bjorn, and Don know what area we should travel to next. Today's first visit? Minnesota, home of the Cabin Country Podcast, the North Star State.
What has the Family Atlas of 1954 got for us concerning the land of 10,000 lakes? Plenty. Before the arrival of the Europeans, Minnesota was home to two major indigenous peoples, the Ojibwe or Anishinaabe in the north and the Dakota in the southwest. The region was first explored by non-indigenous peoples in the late 17th century. French explorers came through the area flabbergasted by the region's woodland beauty and clear waters.
By the late 1700s, that land east of the Mississippi was part of what was called by some the Northwest Territory. West of the Mississippi, the Louisiana Purchase. Minnesota was a U.S. territory in 1849 and a state in the year 1858. According to the resources map from the Family Atlas, what kinds of resources was the Gopher State known for in 1954?
The northwest of Minnesota is farm country along the Red River. Wheat, oats, barley, and potatoes are grown in abundance, alongside sugar beets and commercial flax. As we move to the northeast of the state, sawmilling, papermaking, iron mining, and forestry are big business. This is also the northern expanse of cabin country, with resorts available for both lake sports, river navigation, and woodland exploration. And let's not forget the sport fishing and sailing on Lake Superior.
The big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. What commerce, what history, what courage. Commercial fishing as well as sport fishing abound along the shores of the great lake called Superior. And let's not forget the ageless witch tree along its rocky shores. The sounds of voyagers singing as they paddle their canoes. The western part of the state has plenty to offer as well. More lake resort areas flourish, as well as a booming dairying industry. And let's not forget the wonders that are the Minnesota River Valley. As we head farther south, a powerhouse poultry industry, with our Worthington friends claiming Turkey Capital of the World status. Soybeans and potatoes continue to be agricultural giants as we move towards the southeast of L'Etoile du Nord. Stone mines and granite mines, meat packing and produce canning, pottery, leatherware, woolen goods. The south is also a busy place to be. And let's not forget the booming apple industry along the St. Croix and Mississippi rivers as we move towards the southeast. My goodness, what a bounty of autumn deliciousness. And Lake Pepin. Ed Brewster, where are you when we need you?
You're so tiny!
And the center of the state, clothing manufacture, the railroad and river hubs, and the giant that is flour milling. More than one central Minnesota high school uses the miller as their mascot. As one of the larger metropolitan areas in cabin country, the Twin Cities' several splashes of industry to an established vacation land of parks, lakes, and rivers. The majesty of St. Anthony Falls, Minnehaha Falls, the St. Paul Caves, the Central Lakes. My goodness.
My goodness indeed. I might even say, my land.
Wow, that's big. Northern Lights and boom sites. White pines and resort signs, lumberjacks and great northern tracks, ore boats and aquatennial floats, and lakes from 10 Mile to Vermilion, Catatogama to Mille Lacs, Lower Whitefish to Minnetonka, Lahamadu to Lake of the Woods. Where can angling and water sports get better? Many states will compete with Minnesota, but few will stand equal. The source of the Mississippi right down through Green Giant Country due south. Kayaks and kneeboards await. And somewhere in the depths prowl the trophy muskellunge that will one day grace the wall of your den or rec room.
I can see it now on the knotty pine. Minnesota and cabin country. 10,000 lakes and a whole lot more.
Yeah, this brings back memories for sure. Memories that I've only been told through word of mouth. I've seen the pictures, you know, the old farm folk together in their Sunday best, getting their picture taken, and all the names underneath it. You know, there's Uncle Torbjörn, and there's Cousin Knut, and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
It's the family gathering. I don't think they were having manure carp, but some of the products from the field that was sown by people behind their teams, you know, and the old magic that I think a lot of farm folks are still using. You plant all your seed corn, which is, you know, field corn.
Okay.
The stuff that's intended by and large for cattle to
eat. Oh, sure, sure.
But somewhere in your rows, you kind of play the game of, and we're gonna plant a few rows that'll go the length of the field of sweet corn as well, so we'll get something we can eat out of this. And people who are kind of keen on borrowing from the field, like stupid kids might do, you know.
Mm-hmm. I just stole a bunch of, you had about 4 dozen ears from the so-and-so farm down the road. We're going to just eat like kings.
Well, they're often getting field corn, which is meant for a three-stomached cow. Have you ever had field corn, Fudd? Have you ever?
No, I can't say.
Okay,
I could tell the difference. What?
Oh, you?
How about you?
Trust me, you would.
You would know.
You would know.
Is it
and
really,
I say
really
that as a stupid kid from my high school past. Yeah, out in the middle of kind of western Wisconsin, eastern Minnesota, driving along and up to no good, basically just killing time in somebody's car. And
right.
And hey, I got an idea, and I'm like, I feel like this might be a bad idea, but somebody in the party, I'm going to stop and kind of get behind the trees here. I'm going to run over and I'm going to get us some lunch, man.
Fresh corn
right here and boiling it up, and then realizing, man, is this chewy. Starchy and just sweet corn. My God, starch corn. This can't be right. And maybe the next year will be better. Wow. And, you know, however many of us eating the entire contents and then realizing we're mammals with one stomach.
Ah, right.
And we'll just say paid the price. It was, we've all had sweet corn and enjoyed it. The butter, the salt. Some people, there's a lot of, Mexican street corn, outstanding. You know, the oregano, the mayo. I mean, I know it sounds weird, but cheese and mayo, you know,
yes.
Delicious. You buy this stuff on the streets, it's outstanding. And our folks, it was always butter and salt. I don't know about your house, but
just butter and salt. And
sweet, and if it's sweet and salty.
It's extra good if it's super tender and sweet.
Yeah.
So the field corn version.
Oh, man.
I mean, like
huge. And the tip-off should have been the giant kernels.
Oh, okay.
Just massive kernels, and then trying to get your teeth through those things. Oh, that zooks. You know, it's unbelievable. But I remember trying to rally the troops the next day. And, hey, anybody want to get together? Or, how are you feeling? I'm not going anywhere, man. What about you? Oh, stay home. You don't want to be over here right now. Okay. I get it. So, yeah, and then, you know, talking to various farm relatives who were like, yeah, it worked. They caught you. You know, they weren't going to.
So say again now, where was the sweet corn for human consumption grown then? Probably in a secret middle location.
Yeah. Oh, it was
well away from the road.
The family that was doing the farming, the planting, they knew in their head where it was going to be. It might be 7 rows deep. It might be 3 rows deep. I think the deeper you were, the better, because people were not going to want to go through. You know,
sure.
Corn rows, great for hunting pheasants.
Yeah.
Great for, and usually after late in the season. And
it's all dried out.
They chop the fields, you know. They're
down. Yeah.
And the pheasants are looking for the leftovers that are all over the place and gleaning the kernels, as it were. And we're out there walking along with our 12 gauges going, maybe, you know. Have you hunted when the corn was still standing? It's dry, but it's still standing.
Yes. Well, it's hard to see over.
I have as well. And I'm told that even when the corn is not yet dry, it's still green. Those corn leaves are sharp.
Yeah.
They can really do some, as a result of the farmers, you know, long sleeves, maybe a jacket, you know, that kind of thing, gloves. And as hunters, obviously, we, you know, the thick jackets, you know, the kind of canvas jackets, whatever.
Right.
You're not going to get cut to shreds. But I, my old neighbor who bequeathed to me one Christmas a 16 gauge and a 22 long rifle. He, you're kind of the kid, so I'm giving you the guns, and you're going to use them. You're going to get out there and hunt. And he would tell stories about being a teenager just bringing the gun out to bring in the cattle or whatever. My dad's the same deal, and got to be careful walking through those rows, you know. So knowing that they're sharp, knowing you can get, you know, it's kind of, you know, children of the corn. It's kind of hard to get through these rows. It's that they grow in thick, and it's not real easy to walk those rows without making contact. So they'd go a few deep, or several deep, and they knew in their head where it was. It looks a little different.
Okay.
You know, to some extent, but it was a plan to, you know, this is for us, not you. And
yeah, right.
At least three of my farmer relatives were like, absolutely. You know, we didn't work that hard so you could eat. the obnoxious teenager down the road could eat like royalty. That was for us. So they kind of kept that secret.
Gotcha.
I doubt very much you were out trying to steal people's soybeans.
Right.
You know, knee-high and crunchy. And what are you going to do with this?
Right.
I don't know. Coffee substitute? I'm not sure.
It's food. I'm
make
I'm
my own tofu, here. For God's sakes. I doubt it. I really doubt it. But, there is nothing quite like really good, fresh sweet corn.
You know? Oh, yeah.
And let's not forget, FUD, that some of that corn, during a certain era of American history, was used for something the locals referred to, and it was known nationally as Minnesota 13.
Minnesota 13?
Minnesota 13.
I couldn't tell you what that is.
Home-distilled corn whiskey.
Oh, boy.
And we had our own moonshiners up here in the great state, and I think I think I told way back when a wacky tale of my great-uncle going out across a frozen Lake Minnewaska.
Yes, with a puppy?
With
puppy paw?
Yeah. Buying several mason jars full of Minnesota 13, and then halfway back across the lake, no one was feeling any pain, but somebody felt the call of nature after all that moonshine went down the gullet. And I'll keep this puppy in my pants to keep it warm so it doesn't freeze to death, and then producing a paw and wetting both his slacks and the pup. There must have been some crying in those slacks. Your pants are whining. That's not the worst of it.
Oh, wet and whining pants.
Oh, 20 below on a sleigh.
Wow. Middle of a lake.
Let's talk
frozen
about
lake.
Who's got a good case of frostbite? I can think of worse places that I'd rather have frostbite than down by the old mill stream, as it were. So
wow.
I think it became quite the joke for that entire crew, but that poor dog.
And then, oh my gosh,
the guy with the sodden, I'm guessing frozen pants. I mean, what do you do with the dog at that point?
Somebody else take this pea-scented dog, because my pants cracked. Giddy up. Look lively.
Oh my gosh.
Daddy's got to get home ASAP.
Wow. Minnesota 13.
Well, involving horses there too, you know. They had
the horse drawn
a team of four on that sleigh, but I can't
get you across the lake.
I can't speak. Yeah.
20 below zero.
Minnesota 13.
Wow.
And I know at the current time people are doing that again. It's no longer illegal. It's now more of a Minnesota. Maybe we'll have to talk to Bogland Bub and see if he's been brewing up his own version of Minnesota 13 for sale. I mean,
it's kind of all the fashion now.
You know,
brew your own.
Absolutely. Distilling and brewing. And Wow. I don't know, Fudd's good to have it back. The Schmidt scenic moment.
Well, I guess this is a good one to pick.
The workhorses and the Elliot Ness. Yeah, that's right. an interesting hat that guy's. I mean, you know, my ancestors were always, it was a ball cap. Oh. You know, it was a ball cap on your head, and it said something along the lines of, you know, Pioneer Seed or DeKalb Seed or something like that, Funk Hybrid, that kind of stuff. It was a ball cap, and I just saw a picture of my Norwegian grandfather, you know, sitting there in his suit looking uncomfortable with his kids and his spouse, and my wife pointed out, oh, yeah, can't tell what he does for a living. His upper half of his face is pale, and the lower half looks like incredibly tan. So this guy was out on the John Deere, you know, all day long.
Under his cap.
Yep.
Keep his brow kind of not burnt.
And correct. But half the, yeah, he ended up, nice beard you've grown. Yeah. No, actually, okay, no, you've just got a.
Like that Fred Flintstone kind of painted gray stubble look.
Right.
Except for his farmer red or something.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Wow. How come half your face is gray? Oh, it's beard.
Beardage.
I see.
Wow.
Indeed. So.
Well, yeah. That's,
I hope that does well by our listenership.
I think so. I enjoyed it.
I had fun with it. My gosh. I remember you fished that out, and I thought, workhorses. All right. Didn't we cover horses at one point? I thought we covered horses and cattle. And
right.
I think we stayed away from sheep. Not a lot of.
But it brought the. The farming connection.
The farming connection and a little bit of fishing, too.
Right, with the grubs and the night crawlers.
Right, through that well-rotted
in the manure pile.
Yes, indeed.
Wow.
It's stratifying. It's like metamorphic rock. This is outstanding. Lift up that pile. Get those worms. Let's go fishing.
The fish will be jumping out of the stream or
that's
the
right.
lake.
I'll take a fish that likes a manure worm over a fish that likes a cigar butt. There you have it.
That's awesome. Well, terrific.
If we're lucky, you might be seeing the horse and farmer connection spinning on our webpage.
I think we'll have to feature it.
That could be there. Could be Listen, there.
Listen, it's back by
it has
popular
returned.
Demand. What the heck happened to the Schmidt Scenics?
Listenership called out, and by gad, we responded. So
that's right.
Good to bring it back, and good to just kind of shoot the bull.
That's right. That's right.
Quote a teacher I used to work with, you just need to shoot the bull every now and again. You need a bull session.
That's what you do in cabin country.
Oh, fire it's all going. About, yeah, coffee is ready to go. The fire is roaring. Might be a cigar lit.
Oh, yeah. There might be.
And
there
a radio be. Show or two being listened
that's right.
to, but at the same time, the bull is being shot. Hopefully not too painfully. Anyway, thanks for joining us on this welcome back edition of the Schmidt Scenic Collection. We got more
moment.
To come.
That's
There's
right.
There's at least 8 more scenics.
That's right. There's
I'm
more
excited,
to come.
Fun.
Me too.
Big stuff.
Me
All
too.
Right. Back to the show.
Mitt's Coffee has offered premium roasts of world-class coffee to the upper Midwest for years. And as cold weather changes the tint of the Northwoods, Mitt's offers you Laughing Goose Blend Dark Roast, a coffee that will shake the cobwebs loose and lift you into your day's events. Laughing Goose is the perfect mix of strength and taste, like the mighty bird that gave it its name. There is no problem or challenge you can't soar over after 3 or 4 mugs of Laughing Goose. The strong, rich flavor of a dark roast, with the smooth drinkability of a medium blend. Strong, hot, straight from the pot. What more could you ask for on a crisp autumn morning? And of course, Mitt's still offers its full range of coffee blends, including Morning Dove Early Morning Blend for those who need a milder start to the day, Yodeling Loon Espresso, our strongest blend for a potent cup, and Whistling Wood Duck Medium Roast for those who like to keep a full pot on all day long.
Laughing Goose is yet another of the flavorful coffees offered by Mitt's House of Fine Roasting. Mitt's Coffee, the brew that flew with the Great Northwest.
The continuing logbook of Terrible Tim Torgerson, The 38, Part 2 of Wabashaw Red Eyes.
Thank you.
It's another muggy and hazy early morning, arguably St. Paul's most humid summer in decades. When is this infernal humidity and heat going to pass? I still don't have AC in the truck. Guess the folks in the garage have their hands full. I understand that Doug and Mike need brakes in their trucks, and that's important, but clearly I need my air conditioning. Today is kind of unique for a guy like me. I'm less edgy. The summer's heat, humidity, and lack of rain have made the bushes and weeds of the ditches and public land area thin and weak at best. An agent can see through most of the scrub. The stands of shrubs where goofy teens would hide and throw eggs at traffic or smoke things they shouldn't don't provide a place to hide this summer. Kids will have to get craftier. Not that that's ever been a problem. I often have to pick up after them, I know. So I'm not needing to keep my eyes peeled on the ditches as I drive through the regional and county parks. Pretty easy days of it. Responding to calls, mostly. Health issues around beaches and parks with people who are dehydrated or dealing with early stages of heat stroke. A call to the EMTs is where those situations go. I'm driving out of the lots at Harriet Island when I see a guy waving his arms wildly from the other side of the road. He's not far from the cave entries where they've been sealed and blocked. This was the place where that older gent had claimed to see the spectral form of what he called a period-style gangster. His gangster had glowing red eyes, as I recall. Saw him standing amidst the tree shadows near where the Ohio Street hill begins to climb. Now I've got a guy holding something, jumping up and down, and clearly trying to get my attention. As I slow the truck down along the shoulder, I see that his held object is a metal detector. He looks equal parts excited and worried, and begins stammering at me before I can even turn off the truck.
Hey, you're park police, right? Something like the police, anyway, right? I'm not sure if you're the right person to see this or not, but you're here, so check this out. Come on over here. You gotta see this.
He runs over to the tree line and looks around excitedly as though he's not quite sure of something. Then he starts nodding his head and yelling again.
Come on over here. Make sure you got your phone. You're going to want to call this one in, I'm guessing. Check it out. I made sure I didn't touch it once I saw what it was.
Almost as though he thought it would help me believe him, he passed the metal detector over the area one more time. It wailed out its alarm call. Something here is metal, all right. I look over at where he held the detector coil. Something is sticking out of the ground, just barely perceptible. As I look closer, I realize it's a rusty tube with a rusty sight at the end of it. This is a gun barrel. Wow, quite a find. I photograph it with my phone and mark a GPS spot for it as well. Sir, don't touch anything, please. I walk back to the truck.
What do you think, man? What have I found? I know what I think it is.
Okay, what do you think it is? I'm half asking the obvious question just to keep him talking. Maybe then he'll leave the gun alone. He did find it, but this is more a police and outdoors agent situation than one for civilians.
That's a gun, bro. Looks like it's been there for a while, too. I'm guessing it's a .38 special.
Why do you say it's a .38? I'm fairly sure he's right, by the way.
Looks like the kind you only see in movies and on TV. .38 special. Mr. Saturday Night special, right?
I now have the gloves on and an evidence bag. I want to thank you for calling me over. That was the right thing to do. But I've got it from here.
Okay.
He seems like he wants a reward or something. I don't have anything for him except a plastic junior agent badge, the gifts we give to small children. I'm guessing he doesn't want it. Thanks again, sir. After a bit of poking around with the straight blade screwdriver from the truck, I have the rusty handgun out of the ground and in my hand. The young man was right. This was a rusty old .38 service revolver. Some of the wooden handle grip was gone, and there was a bit of rust on it. The barrel is full of dirt, well-packed dirt. I call in the find to the office.
You have an old .38 found near the caves. Have you marked the spot and taken photos?
Absolutely. Guessing you want me to bring this in ASAP, right?
Roger that. See you back here, Torgerson.
Once I'm back at the agency offices, I turn the gun over to our forensics department. I begin filling in the necessary paperwork for finding a firearm in the park, and there's a fair bit of it. After what seems like an hour's worth of hammering away on a computer keyboard, Agent Deckard comes over to my desk. He's got the .38 on a tray.
Tim, this is quite a find. You say it was discovered near the Wabasha Caves area.
You bet. Barrel first. It was sticking up out of the ground, back by a stand of trees off the road.
Well, this is a gun from roughly 1931, Torgy. I'm kind of surprised it's in such good shape for a gun that's been in the ground that long. The disintegration of the grip gives you an indication of how long it's been in the dirt. That and the amount of rust on the metal parts of the gun. Yeah, I'd guess this gun was lost somewhere in the early 1930s.
That'd make it during St. Paul's gangster era, right?
I'm not a betting man, Tim, but that's what I'd guess. I'm going to send it over to the police station for safekeeping.
So, a mob-era gun sticking up out of the dirt in roughly the same place where Joe Krasner saw a silhouette of what he thought was a 30s-era gangster hiding in the trees. A gangster who was all shadow and glowing red eyes and then faded from sight as the old man began to panic. This is getting interesting. I've heard about trigger objects. No pun intended. And how real-time objects may actually anchor energies to specific areas. The cynic in me makes me shake my head, but this is a pretty unique coincidental pairing. I realize as of Tuesday that I'm finding more and more reasons to patrol past the caves area. Where might this new turn take us?
The continuing logbook of Terrible Tim Torgerson, The 38, Part 2 of Wabasha Red Eyes.
GSPN is proud to offer the latest album by Gus Smooth Angler Belgium, Cabin Country's premier lounge song stylist. The Smooth Angler will tingle you with such jazz standards as Little Log Shack.
I want to go back to my little log shack in Lake Winnebagoshishville.
That perennial favorite, An Ode to the Bonfire, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes.
Pine cones crackling in the fire. Smoke gets in your eye.
The silky stylings of autumn leaves.
Those golden leaves clog up my cesspool.
Don't let the screen door close on summertime.
Well, your mixture's rich, and your prop shaft is greasy.
And let's not forget the old cabin country standard, Salt Burbuck.
That oily fish wraps round my wrist. Salt Burbuck, Salt Burbuck. That oily pest.
Gus Belgium, the Smooth Angler. Look for his music on cassettes and CD, as well as on playlists, and of course, on the homepage of Cabin Country. Available as always, both online and as one of the top ranking podcasts on GSPN, the Gas Station Podcast Network. Gas up, tune in, and let the Smooth Angler take you away.
Well, Bjorn, we're kind of at the end of the summer here.
It did go by quickly.
Kind of did. It's been a hot one.
Real hot and moving at light speed. It's kind of crazy, though.
Super dry and hard to keep the lawn from dying. I made a valiant effort this year. I've always been one of those, what's the point? It's just going to go dormant and it'll come back later. But man, it's not just going dormant. It's just being fried away.
Right, right.
But anyway, that's boring suburban talk about your lawns.
Let's take it up north. Well, how many times did you have to prime the mower up in the Gull River?
I don't think I've mowed this year ever since the multiple trips this spring to get that new pump put in
with my
dad and others have mowed when it was needed, but now it's so dry, haven't needed it. But closer to home here, you made the annual trip to
Great Minnesota get together.
That's right. The Minnesota State Fair.
You got together. The early risers, yeah.
With a handful of others.
I become that individual, FUD, where for me, the ideal time to be at the shack on the river or somebody's cabin on the chain. Back in the days when I was a kid, I loved the weekends and the crazy just boats everywhere and jet skis. Mm-hmm. Slalom skiers going down Daggett into Little Pine, all that good stuff. Love to be in the thick of it. There's people. There's lots to do. This is a hub of energy. And, not, you know, I'm at that phase in my life now where I'm kind of, I want to go up and on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Come back late Thursday. You know, got the whole chain to yourself. You got the whole, or at least precious few compared to. So that, big sporting events, even the music lover in me that wants to go see the huge events at the big venues. That person has taken a very long nap. Uh-huh. I'm not there anymore. The crowds don't do it for me anymore. But uh-huh. I want to be. You know, I'll go see a show or two at a smaller venue or whatever. But yes, indeed, it's funny how things change. And my spouse is now kind of keen on going to the fair. I think from both a work standpoint and seeing what's out there, and just a day out away from the house, and there's a little memory trigger there too. Her dad used to work the fair every year, and I did. She loves to go, and I'm the guy now, kind of. Well,
oh really?
Think I might go practice the bass for a while? Or then. Yeah, I did in fact go along with my better half, wandered around a bit, and where I'm drawn often as not is, you know, with the old farming heritage, my family, Machinery Hill. Still, you know, I couldn't have been more bored, I think, as a kid.
Yeah, let's go look at the new combines. And
come on. I mean, look at all this stuff. But now it's kind of, to be there on a day when they're running the old steam-powered stuff is always interesting. That was not the case this time for me. The DNR building, you know, with the old log construction and dioramas and the aquariums full of local fishes.
Local fish.
Yeah, all that good stuff. And then the stock barns. I'm still a sucker for, let's go look at the goats and the pig and the, you know,
the
all
cows.
This
kind of, the cows. Look at the cows, for gosh sakes.
We were there early enough that very little was open. So it was just a lot of walking around and looking at stuff and then getting her to where she was going to work for the day over at the Eco Experience and watching the massive line for some new type of handmade donut.
Oh, really?
That people were talking quite a bit about, and hung out for a while and realized I had some script stuff to do for the show and some practicing to do on the instruments, and there were paintings I wanted to work on, and that sounded a lot more interesting. So I did get to the fair. I did. Yourself, FUD, were you amongst the record crowds that seemed to...
Oh no. My wife and I went back about 17 years ago, and... Your thing with crowds has kind of been there all along for me.
Okay, yeah.
So, no. But what I do want to hear, turning it back to you, Bjorn, because I don't have anything exciting to share about that. well, we did post the picture of you seeing the giant moose.
The big moose made out of recycled cardboard.
Yeah, that looked pretty imposing.
And the giant, the world's biggest floating loon.
Yeah.
Also made out
Gotta post that as well.
I think that's been put to sea a couple times, too. It's been run out as kind of like, hey, check this out. It's the world's biggest cardboard loon, and well painted and looked good. It was massive. It kind of.
I always wanted to make something like that, you know, for the Gull River. Something really very Loch Ness monster-y, you know, like
the world's biggest coot.
I'll just put it out there, and I'm going to scare people. But
take this 410 and try to hit it.
More,
I missed.
Couldn't hit the broadside of a gigantic. Constructed coot. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Cardboard and polyfiber.
But I'm sure if I couldn't hit it, several neighbors would take it upon themselves to get in their pontoons and fishing boats and, hey, let's go blast the giant coot that's floating around.
Demolition derby.
Yeah. But you also stopped by, I saw you leaning on a tri-hull pontoon.
You know, it's kind of fun over by that, I guess it's closer to the big State Fair water tower that you see from... Sterling, you know, and there's more kind of outdoorsy kind of stuff. Some boat dealerships and a lot of kind of ATV aficionados. And Yeah, I was just mightily impressed by this. And I guess there's nothing new. I was talking to somebody I work with today who said, yeah, we have one of those.
Oh.
And we've got, and the man of the house wants to put twin 300 horse motors on the back of it.
Good Lord.
A triple pontoon. I mean, it's a pontoon boat with three of the hulls.
Sure, sure.
That rest in the water. So I said, well, it's got to be a stable ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why he wants to get the thing up to like 100 miles an hour. I don't really understand. It's not moving at all side to side, but boy, are we flying it. Yeah, good. You can,
on a pontoon.
So I kind of leaned against it like it was mine. And granted, hey, it's a new ride for this fall up on the Gull River.
Oh, yeah.
No, I was just dreaming. But it was a beautiful boat. Big boat, huge motor on the back. And then saw this in a couple different vendors there with the, and it's common to see the big pontoons or the big speedboats that can also be used for, say, Great Lakes fishing.
Yeah.
Or if you're going to take it out on Mille Lacs or Lake of the Woods. And you have
right.
Miles to cross before right. you find the spot you marked on your GPS as the heavy hitter. You know, like,
or even
we got to be here, you know.
Lower Gull Lake with David Ebner.
Absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely. And but they've always got that big, big motor. And then next to it, something along the lines of a 9 or a 10 horse.
Sure. For
it's used for probably trolling, I'm guessing, or just quietly moving about from place to place.
Yeah.
And I noticed this time around, I always thought, well, that's, you're probably still grabbing the tiller with those things and kind of manually moving it about, but these were all hooked straight into the wheel.
Wow.
So you're, I don't know.
How you switch over.
Listener will call in and talk about, oh, yeah, I got one of those deals. You switch engines and you know, different, but it's easy and it's a couple of, you know,
this lever here and
yeah.
shift
and you've
that
switched and over to the 9 horse and now you just make sure it's primed and off you go and then you can switch back and go back to water skiing or whatever you want to do. I've seen it. You ever seen people water skiing behind a pontoon?
No, not on the Gull River.
Yeah, on the Whitefish chain for a couple of years there, it was not uncommon to see one of those super, super pontoons coming down the lake. Just the U.S. flag on the stern flying.
Right.
For all it's trying to rip free, you know.
Yeah.
And then somebody had either the fastest inner tube ride they'd ever had in their life.
Right.
Hanging on for everything they've got, or water skis. It's just like,
yeah.
Man, there's something just wrong about that, but it works.
Weird. Yeah,
it works. You can't play crack the whip.
Oh, I suppose.
With
no,
a
right.
pontoon. Quite
right.
like you can with a V-hull or a tri-hull speedboat.
I don't think
but,
so.
Yeah, it was just interesting to see these things, and yeah, the whole idea of twin 300 horse motors,
yeah,
on the back of a triple hull pontoon, big, you know.
Well, yeah, like you say, that'd be for big water. I mean, what I'm curious too is about. So the Tracker has 115 horsepower, which
right.
is more than enough.
Oh man,
than move. I need.
Right.
But what's also nice about these modern motors is
yes,
that
indeed, yeah.
these 4-stroke engines is that when you can idle at such a quiet, I mean,
right.
this is 115. I don't know about those 300s, but to need a 9 horse in addition to a 200 plus horsepower,
yeah,
I don't quite
get it either. But, I don't know.
We're going to have to
showpiece.
Have an expert.
Yeah. Somebody please
write in.
And if you write in and let us know and remind us all again.
Cabin Country Pod,
no,
at gmail.com.
No period in there, no comma, no slash. Just cabincountrypod at gmail.com.
At gmail.com, yes. But,
I'll send you 2 decks of Omar Sharif playing cards from 1958.
I'm going to have to post those, too.
Think
those
of the
those
prize.
Are for real. Where did you get those? Where did you find those?
They came from one of the various house cleaning activities.
Oh. And
they were not ours, but they ended up in our tutelage, I
wow.
guess.
Is it, Omar Sharif.
Omar Sharif, a young Omar Sharif.
Yeah.
It's a sketch. It's a black and white
right.
pen and ink sketch of a young, like, who is this? Freddie Mercury? No, it's Omar Sharif. Oh.
You know, Dr. Zhivago.
Dr. Zhivago. There we go.
And what's that other movie? Dr. Zhivago.
Something with Barbara Streisand.
Oh my gosh.
What would that have been? Funny Lady, maybe? Does that sound right?
Oh, that could be. That
He's
could
kind
be.
Of a young, dashing ne'er-do-well card shark.
He was also, remember, he played a hitman in one of the Pink Panther movies.
Omar Sharif.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's this beautiful, like, Russian spy or something that
right.
Is coming to kill Inspector Clouseau, but instead she runs into Omar Sharif. I think he's there also to kill him. I can't remember. Okay. I'm going to have to rewatch this one. But then they just end up getting all romantic. And so she thinks that Clouseau now is this hot lover. So then later, she shows up again in his bed.
Oh, my.
And Clouseau has a fantastic scene where he's trying to be Mr. Romantic and suave and take off his suit and tie and he gets caught around his head and all that. But, so, yeah, that's... I hate to say it. Those are the two movies I know most about Omar Sharif. Dr. Zhivago and one of the Pink Panthers.
Something involving the Pink Panthers.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute, though. He was also in, Top Secret.
Oh, yes.
Remember that?
Yes. Came in after the car crusher.
Yeah, and he was all compacted and...
clanked through the door and fell over.
Wasn't he trying to sell... Was it him trying to sell... souvenirs?
No, he was talking to that guy.
Oh,
the souvenirs gentleman in the I'm blind glasses.
Oh, okay.
Was yeah, the fake dog poop and a can of whipped cream and I think a cigar that exploded and yeah, he kept getting he was the butt of all the jokes. So.
Oh my gosh,
see, that's good stuff.
I mean, these are the kind of movies we like to watch. You know, when we're after a stogie and staring at the fire, listening to some old radio shows, we'll
long
head in
afternoon of casting off the dock.
Yes. We'll watch some silly
Absolutely.
Thing from the 80s.
Top Secret, that's my fave with Omar Sharif. So.
Yeah, that's a funny one. Some people hate it. It's
slapstick.
Over the top. Well, yeah, so, all right, State Fair. Omar Sharif.
All good. It was kind of a crazy 24 hours there. We went to the Gopher home opener against Nebraska, which also tends to get me kind of stressed out. So
when was this? Was that just...
That was Thursday night.
Oh, okay.
And then woke up Friday morning to go to the Great Minnesota game together. So yeah, it was two big crowds.
Wowzers.
Inside of roughly 24 hours. So I was in rare form by the time I got home. I was
you're
in need of a sparkling water and a paintbrush. Yes.
Excellent. Yeah, and I avoided it.
As per usual.
Yeah, that is.
Can you remember, Fudd, from the last trip you and Molly went? Was there something in particular that sealed the deal for the two of you? Kind of like, I don't need to come into this ever again. Was it the crowds? Was there a food offering? Was there,
I don't know,
anything in particular? The band that was playing at the Coliseum? I didn't come here to hear nonstop. Fill in the blank in the background.
I think it was mostly the crowd and getting around with a 16-month-old, and I think Molly was pregnant with number two, and we had decided after that last trip, right nearby is Como Park, another long-standing favorite spot of Twin Cities people.
Amen.
Under
Como,
the glow
Lake
of
Como,
St. Paul's number one. Como Park, they've got the conservatory and the little zoo and a big old-fashioned carousel. And in fact, I remember as a kid going there, and I think I have home movies of me crying because I was too afraid of the sound of the tilt whirl and all the the mini roller coaster.
Sure.
It's too loud, Mom.
The little airplanes that go around in a circle. And...
Right. And what are those little cars that are all sparkly colored and they have the...
Or the boats. Remember the boats?
Oh, yeah.
By the time I was old enough to be there and walking under my own steam, those boats were in pretty tough shape.
Yeah.
But you get in those and just go around in a circle for 2 minutes and ring the bell.
So we thought we'd enjoy that. And we did for a couple of years at Como. But then that started getting really overly crowded. So
popular spot.
What turned out then to be the most fun for us is when we would go up to the cabin and took our girls to the new location of Paul Bunyan Land.
Of course.
And they have those old cars and the old boats that go around in
the
a circle.
Train.
And up until, of course, we did a special episode of Paul Bunyan Land.
You bet.
And it was
Pyrite Pete.
Pyrite Pete. Oh, my gosh.
Sourdough Sam.
With his wonder how his beard is doing these days, falling off. Hello there. And
I remember their old haunted house, too. There was some sort of bearded skeletal figure that kept popping out of a window about two stories up.
No, well, that was Pyrite Pete.
Was that Pyrite Pete?
Yeah.
Howdy, partners. I'm up here in the window of my mine shack. And my name's Pyrite Pete. I run this here old mine.
Because you had mentioned that near the end run of the kids still finding it interesting, Pyrite Pete was starting to lose the beard.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It was coming off at kind of a rakish angle.
Yes.
At what point does Pyrite Pete's beard float down into someone's cup of fries?
Oh, God, I gotta get a new cup of fries. The Yeah,
Pete's beard.
Just, yeah, beardage here. I don't know.
Your fries have won a beard award. Give me a new cup.
And Pyrite Pete looks more like an old Sears male mannequin without his beard, and he's just slowly turning his head from left to right and
right. Wearing his Sears.
Good times.
Sport coat from Blair.
But
yeah.
But the girls kind of outgrew that, and so we haven't been now for a couple of years, but those were fun. And what I liked about it is that in the new location, and of course they added on Pioneer Town, which was the collection of all, you can't imagine the amount of antiques and stuff we went into this. Go back into our anthology of Cabin Country episodes and you'll find Paul Bunyan Land.
Oh, absolutely.
We got clips and interviews from our walk. In fact, walking in and having, as Paul does, he'll call your name out. And
right.
He said, "Oh, it's Bjorn and Fudd."
I had to do everything in my power to overcome that childhood fear.
Right.
I don't want him to see me.
Yeah. Oh,
he's going to try to eat me.
What's going to happen?
Look at the size of that yap.
Yeah, no. In fact, I think you took a shot of me sitting on Paul's
right on
shoe.
his big boot. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. So
it was a leap of faith for me. It was a growth moment.
But I liked returning there with having little kids because it wasn't nearly. I mean, at least when we went, it wasn't as crowded as it is at Como Park or the fair. Right. You know, fairgrounds.
Well, on that note, Fudd, we have had a few communications from people who have listened to some of the shows. It's new to them, and they talk about Sometimes we give myself a fair amount of gentle ribbing for all the, remembering the past kind of tales that we spin on Cabin Country. But somebody got back to me with we'll talk more about the individual later. He was our vaunted snapping turtle hunter.
Oh, yeah.
Good friend from long ago. And he was like, "I really appreciated that. It brought me back to things that got real sentimental about old cabins past and..."
Right,
renting a boat and having to just do the slow crawl up and down these docks I used to fish in front of, and fabulous luck as a kid and nothing at all now as an adult. But it felt right, going back in time and still seeing so-and-so on the dock.
That's what we're all about here.
Right,
Cabin Country.
We're looking for your tales, your stories, and especially as the winter is off there on the horizon howling and we get a little closer to our favorite time of the year.
That's right. Right around the corner, Bjorn.
Yeah, people are closing up the cabins. They're shutting off the pumps. They're draining all the water systems if they're not going year-round, if it's not a year-round place, and they're getting ready to kind of close things up. Now, good friends have year-rounders, too, and they're like, "Oh, what are you talking about? I don't have to do any of that. We keep the heat on, Okay.
Right.
Well, lost on me. We always closed up. And that time's right around the corner. It's just, again, another 90-degree day here in mid to late September. But we know what's coming around the corner. It's going to cool off tomorrow.
And as a Minnesotan, you're more than ready for it.
Yes.
It's like not looking forward to a long, drawn-out winter, but...
autumn.
You're ready for the change of colors.
Heat. Apple orchard season.
And the thinning of the foliage. And
that's right. At night, you need that flannel shirt with the lining. Put that on, sit around the campfire.
Well, and what's fun is on our last recent trip with the kids and Molly, their favorite thing as they got a little older, of course, is to go into Nisswa and visit all the shops.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And I'll usually end up getting myself a new flannel or something from,
you bet.
I think it's Lundgren's or something.
Sure.
It's funny to buy it on a 90-degree day.
Sweating profusely.
Looking forward to when you can wear it.
Finally wear this shirt, for God's sakes.
But also what we look forward to is Halloween and our
annual offering.
The annual Halloween season Cabin Country episode. I think we look forward to that. It's as much as I've always liked Halloween, it's fun to spin the tales.
Well, Lord knows there's no richer kind of target area than Cabin Country for stories that might run a little electricity up the spine
and
get you thinking about things. Mine country, logging camps.
Oh, yes.
The old cabins that are starting to fall apart off the roadside. There's a lot to work with. And then, of course, water.
Yeah.
Everywhere water.
Right.
And it cools off and the rivers and lakes are steaming in the morning because of the difference in heat, air temperature.
Oh, yeah.
Water's still warm, but the air is cooling off.
But we will have more.
Oh, we're right around the corner.
We're cooking. We're preparing
things
some.
In the hopper, and we're getting ready to do it from the shadow.
Yes, of St. Paul's number one.
Right. Wind whistling down the flues and chimney stacks. Ah, it'll be wonderful. Looking forward to it. But and, yeah. what's the time frame look like now, Fudd, for you and the family as far as dock out?
Well, I'm not
down,
sure. So here we are.
Get out the old Sears vacuum cleaner top and
You know what?
Suck the water out of.
Ever since last year when you and I did this ceremonial last blowing out of the water lines of the cabin with my dad's Sears.
Yeah, top of a shop vac.
Shop vac, and it broke and I had to duct tape it. And my brother and I decided, all right, this is the last year. Let's get a real pump. Not only that, did we go through the trouble, Bjorn, of trying to do that, but I didn't do it properly. I didn't open up the faucet handle of the shower.
So it froze solid.
It froze and broke. And in addition
I shouldn't laugh.
But no,
that's not funny.
You know, that's what cabin country.
Part of the deal.
Is all
part
about.
Part of the deal, learning by doing.
The stupid mistakes you make.
Oh, yes.
And I swear my dad takes pleasure in repairing those kinds of things. So rather than get mad, it's worse if I were to just do it, not be aware of it, not do anything about it, than if I were to discover it, as I did this year, with my dad.
Right.
So we can go, yeah, I think that was it. Fudd, I think you forgot to... Well, that's all right, you know, we all make mistakes.
Make a trip
to
the lumberyard, we'll do two shakes of a lamb's tail.
That means more dad and son
there
quality time.
Bonding.
Fixing things, that's what it's all
Heck
about.
Yeah.
So. But everything's running fine up there. And your question as to when, it's early September.
Take the tracker out.
You and I still have to make our autumn time.
Junket. Yes.
Yeah, seasonal, time up there.
Those black rubber worms.
Right, for some late
the
season.
Channel, the weeds are much thinner by this point. And it seems like the fish are a little more interested in the autumn, strangely enough. I don't know why I have that going through my...
Well, it seems like there's a lull in when the weeds get really thick on the Gull River and it's late, sticky, hot autumn, summertime.
Right.
The biting, like I had no luck last time I was up there. And
the last couple, when we made our early summer trip, it was...
Caught that one northern.
Right.
That
was a nice fish.
And yeah, that was nice.
It on the webpage.
That was nice, but other than that, there hasn't been too much, so maybe we'll have better luck.
Did I manage to break another rod? I'm trying to remember.
Oh, no. No,
okay.
No.
All right.
No, I got you one for your birthday.
Right.
To keep up there. One that I think will hopefully
stand
the
test. Didn't
that
break, too? And we're like, we got to bring this back. I remember bringing three of my old Zebcos.
Oh, maybe it was...
The mighty Zebcos.
Oh, maybe that was it. You brought some old reels up.
I don't know. Something broke. I'm a good one for breaking rods, folks.
And I don't know if anybody happened to see. Well, I think four people did, including Buck Fielding. He said this was pretty hilarious. But I posted a video about me vacuuming out the shop. We call it the shop.
Oh, I was one of your.
Oh, were you? Okay.
So two people we don't know. got to watch fun.
Yes, right.
Vacuum out the shop.
So I was vacuuming out it's kind of the bunkhouse. It's the extra cabin. Has a bathroom in it and a bunk
laundry
beds and a laundry. Yeah, laundry. We can do laundry in there.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, we don't even use it much, but I just vacuum it. That's right. You want to leave it cleaner than you find it.
Absolutely.
Well, so I'm vacuuming and in the corner where there's like over a dozen rods, I think mostly belonging to my brother and his kids.
Sure.
And family. Suddenly one of the rods comes barreling across the floor into the vacuum cleaner. And I thought, well, shoot. So I stop it and I turn the vacuum over and I'm just trying to pull the whatever line it got. Well, half the spool was around the roller of the vacuum. Jeez.
How long did it take to... Unfoul.
I cut the line and you know what? As a matter of fact, I think I just left it on there because, Molly and the kids were waiting. It's like it's one of the last things I do before we turn off the vacuum, empty it out, and lock it up, and then we head out. But I thought I'll get this next time. It's it's a vacuum that I think I only use.
Oh my!
So yeah, it was quite an experience. I hadn't done that before, but that's where we keep an awful lot of our rods. I tried to keep most of mine on the tracker in the little storage area underneath. But so that was fun. More cabin country hijinks.
The wacky fun of vacuuming out the shop.
Right. Clean floor, but one of those spools, somebody's going to discover there's not much line in it when they cast it next. So.
Three-foot cast and
right.
Hang on hard to
what's
the
going on here?
Handle, or you'll fire that rod right out into the go.
There we go. There she blows.
But at any rate, yes. Well, I suppose we ought to maybe bring this episode to a close and start get working on the...
Well, there's plenty in the...
In the hopper.
Oh, yeah. There's stories galore. And we got, you know, I know when we first did our first Halloween episode, and we kind of wondered, scratching our chins, you know, is this putting off some of our listenership to hear Cabin Country themed kind of spooky tales on All Hallows Eve? And it seems like so. they do fairly well.
I think they have more. And a lot
and
of listens.
I had a couple of people mention that last year's was actually somewhat frightening in parts.
Yeah.
They had to kind of stop and regroup and wait a minute now.
Yeah.
Well,
good stuff.
The bar has been set.
Right.
The work is being done. You know, I hope we can at least be on par with what we created last year.
Can we raise the bar? We'll have to
see.
And
again, if you're looking for, well, what is he talking about? Just go back a ways. You'll see, like, Halloween episode number 3, or second annual holiday show, or Halloween, you know.
Halloween season's special, whatever we call it.
We have a lot of fun with that.
Yes.
We have a lot of fun
favorite
with that
time
already.
Of year.
Coffee tastes a little better when you can see your breath.
Oh, yes.
It's good stuff.
Get the distant sound of the shotgun pops in the early morning hours.
Echo of the train amidst the report of 12-gauge shotguns.
Indeed. Oh, can't wait to get up there.
That's going to be good. It's going to be good.
All right. Well, thanks again for hanging with us.
Indeed. We'll let the cabin door slam shut and turn off the stove.
That sounds good.
See you next time.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.